Welcome to the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Right this way. Your therapist will see you shortly. In the meantime, sit back, kick your feet up on the couch, and get ready to focus on adding very valuable tools to your marriage toolkit. And now your host and marriage counselor, David Taylor.
What's up, guys? My name is David Taylor, and I am your host. Welcome back to another information-packed episode of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. This is episode number 9, and guys, I want to be honest with you. You're in for a treat. This is going to be probably my most information-packed episode to date. So I do want to forewarn you that you may have to break this up, do this, you know, 30 minutes or 25-minute chunks, because it's going to be a lot of information. But before I get to that, let me go ahead and do the formalities. And if you're new to this podcast, welcome. Where you been at? What took you so long to come to the Counselor's Corner? I ain't gonna judge you, but just know that you've come to the place where you can get credible and tangible marriage-related information from an actual licensed mental health counselor. And over the past 19 years of my clinical experience, I have discovered the things that work to make your marriage healthy. So, see these episodes as a masterclass in marriage where I take a psychological and practical approach to marriage enrichment and education. And this is episode number 9. And, you know, it's weird because I actually recorded a different episode number 9 only to find out that nothing recorded. And this was the very first time that this has ever happened where my microphone, for whatever reason, was unplugged, even though it registered that it was plugged up. So I took that as God saying, I got another episode I want you to put out. So, you know, I'm listening and I'm obedient. So I decided to pivot and I got this episode. This is going to be a banger. I'm telling y'all, this information is going to be very helpful. So I'm going to be discussing a topic that is often not associated with marriage, or even though it is, you don't hear it associated with marriage as much as it needs to. And so my job as a clinician, as a therapist, as a counselor, is to bring this information to the forefront. And remember, I told you guys, the number one reason why marriages fail is ignorance. So we combat ignorance with information and knowledge. Okay, so I'm about to give you guys a lot. And in today's episode, I will be talking about attachment theory. Yes, attachment theory. It doesn't sound sexy, doesn't sound exciting, but I'm telling y'all this stuff, wait till you hear it. But I'm going to talk about attachment theory and how your particular attachment style impacts how you show up in your marriage, as well as how your spouse's attachment style impacts how they show up in the marriage. And because this is a lot of information, I'm just going to dive right in because, listen, y'all going to be here with me. We're going to just do it together. We're going to get through this together. Now, one word of caution before I get started. Both you and your spouse will most likely show up as having one of these particular attachment styles that I will be discussing. Now, try to be honest with yourself and resist the temptation to see yourself as perfect. I know. Just hear me out. It'll make sense in a little while. We come packaged with the wounds of our past. Now, keep that in mind as you're attempting to evaluate yourself and your spouse. You will be tempted to see yourself in a much better light than how you see your spouse. So resist that temptation. And lastly, you will want to take notes on this information-heavy topic. Trust me, you're going to want to take notes. So you're going to have to spice this up, pause it, write down stuff, go back to it, and chances are one day when we do our exclusive Mastering Marriage membership program, I'm going to do a live teaching where I show you the notes, I show you the data, I show you all the other stuff because this goes deeper. So anyways, for now, we're going to go ahead and get started and listen, just take some notes, okay? That's all I got to say. Now, what is attachment theory? Some of you guys, I'm sure you have heard about it. You may be able to kind of recall some of the terms, some of the different attachment styles, but I want to kind of give you some background information on attachment theory. And then I'm going to talk about the four different types of attachment and Then I'm going to leave you guys with just one thing to do, because this type of information is going to be hard to really like fix all of it just by itself. You're going to need some really specific things, but I'll give you one place to start. Okay. So let me talk about attachment theory. Now I'll start at the beginning. Your relationship with your parents or your primary caregivers during your childhood, especially the first 7 years of your life, we call those the formative years of your life. Well, that relationship or those relationships sets the stage for how you will build relationships as an adult. And again, those first 7 to 8 years, those formative years of your life, it's almost like that sets the stage. And then everything after those first seven to eight years, it's just building on top of what's already been established in those first few years. Okay. So just keep that in mind. As infants and children, we are extremely dependent on our parents and our primary caregivers. We come out the womb needing everything. Can't do nothing for ourselves, right? We're almost like the few, if not the only animal species that when we come out the womb, if nobody cares for us, we will die. We can't walk, we can't talk, we can't feed ourselves, we can't move. Think of like a baby cow or I don't know, any type of baby animal. They come out, they can walk, you know, they learn to run really soon and they can see and you know, move and not really fend for themselves, but they're able to, like, they get to make choices that as babies we don't make and we are unable to make. We need our parents and our caregivers for survival. And as a result, we have no choice but to attach to them and trust that they will take good care of us. Like, literally, it requires us attaching to someone in order for us to ensure that we're going to be safe and survive. Based on how you experience those relationships with your parents or caregivers, you will have one of these four attachment styles. Again, there are four attachment styles, and based on how you experienced those relationships, whether they were positive, negative, painful, you're going to have one of these four. So let me tell you the four attachment styles first, and then I'm going to go through each of those four. I'm going to break each of them down, and then we're going to be done. So the first attachment style is called secure attachment. Now, again, resist the temptation to lump yourself into something that sounds good because you want to feel good about yourself, okay? Just want to be honest. Just follow me, walk with me, let's be honest. We're going to go on this journey together. But the first attachment style is called secure attachment. The second attachment style is called avoidant or dismissive attachment. The third attachment style is called anxious or preoccupied attachment. But you can just call it anxious attachment. And the second one, you can just call avoidant attachment. Okay. So the third one is anxious attachment. And then the fourth one is fearful or fearful avoidant attachment. Okay. So you got these four attachment styles: secure attachment, avoidant attachment, anxious attachment, and then we have fearful or fearful avoidant attachment. So fearful-avoidant attachment. That's the last one. So 50% of individuals will most likely fall into the secure attachment category, okay? 50% roughly. And these individuals will be low emotional avoidant, low anxiety in relationships. And again, I'm explain what that means. 20% of individuals will fall into the anxious attachment category. And they're going to be low emotional avoidant, but high anxiety. Then 25% of the population most likely will fall into the avoidant attachment style. And they're going to be low anxiety, high emotional avoidance. And then 5%, only 5% will show up in the fearful attachment style. And they're going to be high anxiety, high emotional avoidant. Okay. So that's kind of how it works. If you look at this rubric here, it kind of breaks it down and you fit into a particular category. But again, I'm just going through this. If I were doing this live, you would be able to see what I'm talking about and it would make more sense. So just pay attention to what I'm about to say. Now, each of these four attachment styles, again, we got secure, we got anxious, we got avoidant, and we got fearful. Each of these four attachment styles have certain traits and characteristics that, when understood, can help you to identify unhealthy behaviors in you and in your spouse. This is why this is going to be important to your marriage, because if you know your attachment style, it helps you to understand those behaviors that are unhealthy that may be contributing to the conflict, that may be contributing to the chaos and the dysfunction. And you may not even know it, but once you understand your attachment style, it'll help you understand your tendencies, why you like what you like and why you do what you do, right? It'll also help you understand why y'all argue about certain things, why certain things trigger you, okay? So just this is why this stuff is going to be important to you. And if the goal is for you to have a healthy marriage, you will want to know how your marriage is impacted by both you and your spouse's attachment style. So get this information and share it with your spouse if they're not listening to this, okay? Because they're going to want to know their style. You're going to want to know their style. They're going to want to know your style so that y'all can be in unison when it comes to managing these things, okay? So now that I've gotten that out the way, let's go ahead and start with the first attachment style, which is the secure attachment. Now, again, everybody going to want to fit into this because it's the one that sounds the best. And I already said 50% of people most likely will show up in this category. So I know you're going to try to qualify yourself, but, you know, be fair. So let's start with secure attachment. Let's go ahead and talk about the first attachment style. So individuals with a secure attachment come from parents who did not break their trust. That child, so you, when you were a child, you felt safe. You felt seen. You felt known. Your needs were taken care of. If you were crying for a couple of seconds, your parents rushed in there, whether it was mom or dad, and they were able to tend to your needs. They didn't just let you cry it out. Or if you fell, they came and rushed. Or if you were hungry and you couldn't communicate that because you were a baby, they picked up on that and were able to feed you. If you had gas, they burped you. If your diaper was wet, right? But also that means that you felt comfort and valued by your caregivers. You felt protected and safe. So they didn't put you in compromising situations. You weren't on the couch in the middle of them smoking weed or doing drugs and, you know, drunk and in the middle of fighting and domestic abuse. You weren't in those types of situations. And therefore, you felt that you could trust your parents. Again, this is not something that you thought about consciously because, of course, you didn't have those thoughts. But you felt it. You could feel it. And secure attachment, it implies that a person is comfortable expressing emotions openly. Now, remember, I said that an individual with a secure attachment, they're going to have low emotional avoidance and low anxiety, which means that they are okay with expressing emotions. They're not going to avoid emotions, and they're not going to have a lot of anxiety inside of a relationship. Okay? And we'll talk about what that looks like in a minute. But just know for now that secure attachment, it implies that you are comfortable with emotions, open up, receiving, expressing, hearing, communicating, all those things you tend to be more comfortable with, okay? Again, try not to qualify yourself just because it sounds good. Also, individuals with secure attachment, they don't depend on the responsiveness or approval of their partner, and they tend to have a positive view of themselves and others. So again, they're not dependent on emotional reciprocity. So they reach out and they get maybe rejection or their bid wasn't received. They're not triggered. They're able to deal with that and process that appropriately. Okay. Now, let me give you 8 signs of a secure attachment style inside of a marriage. So if you have this attachment style, most likely you are going to demonstrate these tendencies. Let me go over these 8. Okay. The first one is you're able to regulate your emotions and feelings, and you're consistent with that, meaning you don't just do it once every blue moon, but you're consistently able to regulate your emotions and your feelings. The next one is you have a strong goal-oriented behavior when you're on your own, meaning you don't have to be around the presence of your spouse to feel productive or to feel like, oh, now I can work. I have confidence. I have someone there that's connected to me. You can do, if you're by yourself, you can still, you don't have a problem playing by yourself. Okay. And these kids tend to be okay playing on their own. The next sign that you have a secure attachment in your marriage is these individuals are great at bonding and opening up and trusting others. Now, I'm not saying this is always a good thing, but I'm just saying this person doesn't have a problem with connecting, with opening up, and with trusting others. So if you find yourself struggling to trust others, don't try to qualify yourself into this group. I'm not saying to disqualify yourself, but just be honest. You may have a little bit of this and a little bit of something else I'm going to say later. Another sign is you know your purpose and you know what brings you fulfillment, right? So you're not depending again on the proximity of your spouse to feel purposeful, to feel fulfilled. You could do that on your own. You're self-sufficient. Another sign is you can communicate your needs effectively. Now, the key word is effectively. Not you can communicate your needs because there's a lot of that, but you can do it effectively. And there's a difference between effective communication and ineffective communication. And I talked about that, I think, in episode 3 when I talked about communication, that there's a right way to do it and then there's a very wrong way to do it. And you should know if you're effective or not at communication, but most people are nose blind to how they communicate. So you're going to have to rely on the feedback of your family, your friends, and most likely your spouse to let you know if you communicate your needs effectively. And if I had more time, I will go deeper into this and give you examples of what this looks like, but just, you're going to have to wait and join our membership program so that you can have direct access to this information when that time comes. Let me give you another sign that you have this attachment style. You're comfortable with closeness and mutual dependency. So meaning you don't get uncomfortable when you're close with someone. You don't feel weird. You don't feel awkward. You're comfortable. And you're okay with mutual dependency, meaning you're okay with someone depending on you and you depending on them. And again, think of a child, right? In an ideal situation, the child comes out the womb and there's a dependency that they have on their mom and on their dad or their caregivers. And that dependency is safe and every need or most of the needs they have are met. But when that isn't met, then they will struggle as kids and teenagers and then adults to have dependency because then they will feel like I can't trust or depend on nobody. I got to do it for myself. Right. And I know a lot of people like this. So don't try to sit there and act like, yo, I'm good with depending on people. Nuh-uh. I've heard y'all say, I don't trust folk. Anyway, let me keep going. Another sign that you have this is you're comfortable being alone. Are you comfortable being alone? Or do you did you have the habit of dating someone just so that you can have proximity? Even though you know or you knew that dating that person, what it would yield, you would prefer to have someone than no one, then that would mean that you don't have a secure attachment style or you most likely don't have you don't fit fully in this category. Lastly, another sign is you're able to reflect on how you are being in your marriage. You have self-awareness. And remember, I did a whole podcast on emotional intelligence and self-awareness was the very first pillar of emotional intelligence. Can you reflect on how you are being in your marriage? Like, can you see yourself? Can you see your flaws? Can you see the areas where you struggle? And are you able to be honest about that? Okay. If so, then you most likely have a secure attachment style inside of your marriage. Now, let me go forward and let's talk about the second attachment style, which is the avoidant or avoidant dismissive attachment. Again, if you could just call it avoidant. Typically for kids, they will call it avoidant. For adults, they will call it dismissive. That's why I just put the two together. That way, if you're researching this or Googling it, you can type in avoidant attachment or dismissive attachment and you'll get the same type of information. So this attachment style is often referred to in childhood as anxious avoidant. And then an adult is called the avoidant dismissive attachment. And it is one of the three insecure adult attachment styles. Now, again, you have secure attachment, and then these three that I'm going to talk about now, they fall into the other category of insecure adult attachment styles. Now, parents who are strict and emotionally distant, parents who do not tolerate the expression of feelings and expect their child to be independent and tough, might raise children with an avoidant attachment style. Did y'all hear that? How many of our parents didn't let us express our feelings? How many of you guys grew up hearing this notion, children should be seen and not heard, right? I'm the parent. What I say goes. right? I'm sure you guys have heard stuff like that, and you guys can say even more. If you were raised in that type of environment, chances are you might fall into one of these categories. Okay? I know y'all was quick to say, no, I'm in that first category, but let's be real. That's going to be based off of how you were raised and how you responded to that. And parents who were strict, parents who were emotionally distant, parents who did not make room and space for the consistent expression of emotions, or they just weren't even there altogether, most likely you may have developed an avoidant attachment style. Now, adults with this dismissive or avoidant attachment style, they seem to be pretty happy about who they are and where they are. See, this is where it can get confusing. This is where you can fool yourself, because they seem to be pretty happy on the outside. Like, you look at them, you won't really be able to tell what's going on. They might be very social, easygoing, outgoing, and fun to be around. In addition, these individuals might have a lot of friends. They may be charismatic, extroverted, and they may have a lot of sexual partners, right? Now, I'm not saying like at once, but they may have had a history of multiple, many sexual partners. Generally speaking, they are not alone or lonely. Now, let's go even further. Avoidant adults or individuals with this attachment style, they tend to be independent. Their self-esteem is high, and they do not rely on others for reassurance or emotional support. Now, you can see there's a parallel between this attachment style and secure, but this particular attachment style, it's for different reasons. Okay, let's keep going. These individuals will let you be around them, but will not let you in. You didn't know I was going to go there, but see, this particular attachment style, you could be around me, but I'm not going to give you my heart. They tend to avoid strong displays of closeness and intimacy. So this is the person that they may have a lot of friends, they may have had a lot of sexual partners, but they don't have a lot of deep, long-lasting friendships. They may have maybe one, but they don't have a lot of close, intimate bonds with people. At this point, such people might try to find a reason to end a relationship. So the avoidant attachment, they actually may look to limit or mitigate closeness. And if it's getting too close, they may try to find a reason to end the relationship. They might be highly annoyed by their partner's behavior, the habits, or even their physical appearance. So they're going to find things to nitpick. And this is if they're in relationship with someone and they have this attachment style. They're going to find reasons to keep the distance, keep the wall. Consequently, they start drifting off and distancing themselves from their partner. Okay, so again, adults with this attachment style, they believe that they do not need emotional intimacy in their lives. This is a direct result of their upbringing. Their caregivers showed them that people cannot be relied on. Whenever they sought emotional support in the past, it was not provided. So they had to learn how to live and cope without it. Now, again, I can go even deeper. We're just going to skim some of this today, stir the pot. I'm going to give you 5 signs of an avoidant attachment style in marriage. That way you can qualify yourself or your spouse if this is you. And then we're going to move on to the third one. Now, here's one way to tell if you have this attachment style. Adults with this dismissive avoidant attachment style seem to be pretty happy about who they are and where they are. The next one is, to the avoidant adult, emotional closeness and intimacy are often off the table. Again, they are happy with who they are. They love themselves. They're not insecure. They just don't want to go close or deep. So that's off the table. Or you start getting too close. And this is why a person may have a lot of sexual partners throughout their history, is because they're not sticking with one person for a long time. Once it gets too deep, too serious, or it feels like it is, now they're trying to sabotage the relationship. And to the avoidant adult, the emotional closeness and intimacy is off the table. Not because they will not reap the benefits, but because they do not know how. Okay, so they may want it, but they don't know how to have a close, deep, intimate relationship. Why? Well, they never received that model growing up. Okay. So the third thing is such individuals might invest in their professional development. They're going to put a lot of emphasis on their jobs, their, you know, the things that they are able to grow in personally, and they're likely to build up their confidence on each personal success. So they're going to be highly driven, highly goal oriented, and their professional acumen is good. Their vita, their resume is going to be popping. It's going to have a lot of stuff on it. They seem to be in control. And so for the fourth one, for avoiding adults, social interactions and bonds may remain on the surface. Right. And so they're going to put a lot of emphasis. It could be on how they look. It could be on bodybuilding or working out. It could be on, you know, making sure that they have their makeup and everything right, or on the job, their professional, how they present themselves in a professional manner. They put all of their energy into that because they're not putting energy into their relationships because they don't want to go deep. They don't want to go close. And they tend to avoid strong displays of closeness and intimacy. So we're not doing no PDA. Don't come over here and hug me without, you know, my permission. And definitely don't surprise me with stuff. Don't do that. Mm-mm, right? So that's, if you fit into one of those categories or you have these signs, most likely you fall into the avoidant dismissive attachment style. Okay, let me go to the third one, and I still got two more to go. And I want to make sure you guys get this. Again, like I said, I will most likely have to do a deep dive in our upcoming exclusive members-only program for marriages. But for now, y'all can get this and work with this for now until I can go much deeper. So this third attachment style is called the anxious preoccupied attachment. So if the second one was the avoidant dismissive attachment style, this one is called the anxious preoccupied attachment. Now, anxious attachment is one of the three insecure attachment styles, like I talked about earlier with this most recent one. And this is referred to as anxious ambivalent attachment in children. And anxious attachment develops in early childhood. If you are an adult with an anxious attachment style, there's a strong chance, that almost 100% chance, that it developed early in your childhood. Most often, anxious attachment is due to misattuned and inconsistent parenting. This inconsistency might make it difficult for the child to understand what the parent's behaviors mean and what kind of response to expect in the future. The child might end up confused about his or her relationship with the caregivers whose behavior sends mixed signals. This means you have a parent who one day they show up and they're happy and they're joyful. The next day they're angry, or they don't respond to you like they did yesterday or the day before, right? So this is inconsistent parenting produces anxious ambivalent attachment style. Another factor that is linked to the development of an anxious ambivalent attachment style in children is the so-called emotional hunger of the caregivers. In this case, the caregivers would seek emotional and physical closeness with the children or the child in order to satisfy their own needs rather than their children's needs or their child's needs. So if they are emotionally or physically close to you, it's to satiate their needs, their emotional hunger, not yours. And so you end up leaving that interaction empty and unseen, overlooked, unheard, because they were selfish. And it's okay. I know I'm talking about your parents, but some of us had selfish parents, and we just got to be honest about it. And as a result, low self-esteem, strong fear of rejection or abandonment, and clinginess in relationships are common signs of this attachment style. The thought of living without the partner or being alone in general causes high levels of anxiety. Now, people with this attachment style typically will have a negative self-image while having a positive view of others. So in the relationship, you're going to promote and put your spouse on a pedestal while you're looking at yourself from a skewed and negative viewpoint. And again, this is a direct correlation with your parents being in relationship with you and draining you, getting things from you for them, while all the while not pouring into you what you needed. And a strong fear of abandonment is present, and safety is a huge priority. So sometimes this type of person, they're going to put up with mess because they don't want to be abandoned. They don't want to be neglected. They don't want to be rejected. They want to feel safe. And for them, if they could just be close to you, if you could just be in a relationship and they're there, they feel safe. The attention, the care, and responsiveness of this particular spouse appears to be the remedy for anxiety, right? So a person who has this attachment style will most likely feel more calm with increased proximity. On the other hand, the absence of support and intimacy can lead to becoming more clinging and demanding and preoccupied with the relationship and desperate for love. So this person will love bomb because they need you there or you need them there. They're going to be preoccupied with the relationship. They're going to be clingy, right? And they're not going to be able to get the other stuff in their lives done unless you're close to them or unless they're close to you. So let me give you six signs of an anxious attachment style in marriage. Again, here's six signs of an anxious attachment style. Again, don't try to disqualify yourself. Try to qualify yourself. Now, number one, adults with an anxious, preoccupied attachment style might think highly of others, but often suffer from low self-esteem. So if you're struggling with depression, you're struggling with self-esteem, and you don't have a huge or high sense of self, you most likely will fall into this type of category. These individuals, number two, are sensitive and attuned to their partner's needs, but are often insecure and anxious about their own worth in a relationship. So you put them above you, but you also put you down, and you don't show your worth and your value. So most likely you're going to be with a spouse, or you're going to be the spouse that will kind of walk over. And I'm not saying, you know, abuse, but this type of person will find themselves drifting towards people who tend to be selfish. Now, number three, if the loved one rejects them or fails to respond to their needs, they might blame themselves. I'm talking about the anxious attachment style, right? So if you have this, you're going to most likely blame yourself or label yourself as not being worthy of your spouse's love. Number four, generally, adults with anxious attachment need constant reassurance that they are loved, they're worthy, and that they're good enough. So this type of person, this spouse, you're going to need assurance, and you're going to cling and look to your spouse to give you that reassurance that you are loved, that you're worthy, and that you're good enough. Again, remember, in childhood, the parents, they didn't do that. And if they did, it was for self-gratification, and it wasn't to make deposits into their child. And so as an adult, if you lacked getting that reassurance as a child, it doesn't go away. You're going to be attracted most likely to the person that looks like the ideal version of your parents. And often you'll end up marrying your parents. I ended up marrying the female version of the ideal dad that I never got. Okay, so let me keep going. Number four, this fear might also lead to them becoming desperate, like I said, clingy, and preoccupied with the relationships. Adults with an anxious attachment style are often afraid of or even incapable of being alone. So these individuals will put up with a lot of crap because at least they're not alone. So this is the sixth sign. They seek intimacy and closeness and are highly emotional and dependent on others. So they will tend to use emotions as a way to connect. And so they will depend. If they feel any distance, they'll panic. They'll go into this anxious mode. And the presence of the loved one appears to be a remedy for their strong emotional needs. Okay? Ooh, and I can, if I had more time, I could talk about this, how it looks tangibly and what to do about it. But I'm leaving this up to you guys to evaluate and think about, and then be honest about if you fit into this category or if your spouse does. So let me go into the fourth and final attachment style, and then we're going to wrap up. This last one is called fearful avoidant or fearful attachment. So, this one is known as disorganized attachment in adulthood. Now, again, if you Google it, you can Google disorganized attachment or fearful attachment. You'll get the same information. But this one is more known as disorganized attachment style in adults. And the fearful avoidant attachment style is thought to be the most difficult. Now remember, I said only 5% of individuals will end up in this category. Sadly, this attachment style is often seen in children that have experienced trauma or abuse. The fearful attachment style occurs, like I said, in about 5 to 7% of the population and typically develops in the first 18 months of life. So this is important. This stuff, you would think that it happens over the first few years, but it happens over the first 18 months. And during this formative period, a child's caregiver may have behaved chaotically or in a bizarre manner. Sometimes the parent could have even behaved aggressively towards the child, causing the child to see them as scary. So if you've been abused by a loved one, and it usually takes place in the first 18 months, but in other cases, it could be the first few years, especially if your parents was abusive towards you physically, emotionally, verbally, and even sexually, okay? Sexual abuse is a huge one here. Now, the disorganized type or fearful avoidant type, so those can be interchangeable, this type tends to show unstable and ambiguous behaviors in their social bonds. For adults with this style of attachment, the partner and the relationship themselves are often the source of both desire and fear. So in marriage, your spouse and the marriage, it's often the source of both desire and fear. Fearful avoidant people do want intimacy and closeness, but at the same time, they've experienced troubles trusting and depending on others, especially if they were raised in an abusive situation or environment. And it can even be domestic abuse, right? So if you saw your parents or someone in your family and it was triggering and traumatizing to go through that, you could have developed this fearful avoidant attachment style. Now, these individuals do not regulate their emotions well. So if you are someone that gets triggered quickly and you go from 0 to 10, in a situation that really requires maybe a 2 or a 3, but you go from 0 to 10, you might want to evaluate whether or not you got a little bit of this in you, because they don't regulate their emotions well and they avoid strong emotional attachment due to their fear of getting hurt. Because remember, most likely they dealt with some type of trauma, some type of chaos, some type of abuse as a child. Now, let me give you 8 signs of a fearful attachment style and how it shows up in marriage. The first one is they tend to have a negative view of both themselves and others. So they can be hypercritical. They can always have some complaint. They're comparing and contrasting, but they have a negative view of themselves and others. Number 2, they are at a higher risk of developing mental health issues, such as substance abuse, delinquent or aggressive behaviors, and abuse on their own children. So if you've ever found yourself veering towards abuse towards your child, and I know y'all ain't gonna tell nobody, but if you know, if that's you, then this is most likely a reason why. Number 3, these adults expect and are waiting for the rejection, the disappointment, and the hurt to come. So they're anticipating the other shoe to drop. Because again, growing up in an abusive environment, they did not know if today was going to be the day that daddy came home drunk, or if tomorrow was going to be the day that mommy came home high and just completely let her boyfriend do whatever he wanted to them, right? They didn't know. So they had to constantly be on guard. And as adults in relationships, they're constantly on guard, waiting for the other shoe to drop, waiting for the rejection, the disappointment, the hurt, the argument, the conflict, the judgment, something. They're waiting for it. Number 4, they want to be loved, but they also are afraid to let anyone in. So similar to some of the earlier attachment styles. But in this one, they want it, but they're afraid to let anybody in. Why? Because again, growing up, the person that was supposed to love you the most and protect you the most did not. Okay? Number 5, they fear intimacy and avoid proximity. Similar to individuals with an avoidant attachment style. The main difference for this attachment style, though, is that they want relationships. Where avoiding attachment styles, they ain't wanting a relationship. They ain't not wanting to go deep. This particular individual wants to go deep, but they're afraid to go deep because of what happened growing up. Okay? Number six, they do not reject emotional intimacy. They are simply afraid of it. So they're not rejecting it. They're just outright afraid of it, which is why it may come off as rejection. But really, really, they don't want to accept it. They don't want to open themselves up because I'm afraid that if I do, you're going to hurt me. Because the person that was supposed to love me, all they did was hurt me. Okay? Number seven, they have trouble believing that their partner will love and support them as they are. Again, this person growing up, the person that was supposed to accept them as they are, as they were, was their parents. What happened? The parents were abusive. The mom or dad or whoever, caregivers, were abusive. And as a result, they grew up feeling like that they constantly have to change themselves in order to be accepted. Well, maybe if I don't ask this question, mommy won't be mad at me. Or maybe if I just come home and do my homework and I don't get into trouble or ask for any snack after school, daddy won't come in and hit me. Maybe if I'm just quiet and keep to myself, then when he's drunk, he won't come in and hit me or abuse me. And number eight, the last sign, this mindset can turn into a form of self-sabotage. So if you're known to sabotage yourself, or if you see your spouse, like something good happens and then immediately they, you know, shut it down or they do something that causes it to turn from good to bad, that self-sabotage, that means that most likely they may have some of this or even all of this attachment style. Okay, wow. So I made it to the end of this. I have a lot more information I would like to share. But again, let me give you one action item. And then I'll tell you what to do with this action item. And then we're gonna wrap up. Here's what I want you guys to do. Review these attachment styles and determine which attachment style you fit in the most. So which of these categories do you seem to fit in the most? You may not be a smooth 100% in one category. You may be like a 50% here and 50% there, or 40, 60, 70, 30, 80, 20, but see which of these categories you fall into, okay? Don't try to disqualify yourself. Be honest, but see which of these attachment styles you tend to have. And I would say pick a primary and pick a secondary. Most of us will have a primary and a secondary. And if you've done your work, if you've been doing the work, then you most likely know which attachment style you have the most of. And what I'll do is to address the different attachment styles and what to do, like what do I do if I have a dismissive avoidant or if I have a fearful attachment style? Like what do I do in marriage? How do I make sure that this doesn't have a negative impact on my marriage? Well, that's a great question. What I'm going to most likely do is a part two deep dive. And I probably reserve the deep dive for our upcoming members only mastermind, where I'm working with couples directly and I'm providing, you know, in-person coaching, and I can actually answer these questions and talk about it and give you guys advice. It'll be hard to do it right now. So be on the standby and be on the lookout for that, because that's coming and I'll let you guys know how to access it when it arrives. For now, though, I just want you to be aware of your deficits and your assets, but definitely your deficits, and how they are potentially impacting your marriage. If you have questions, you did this, you listened to this 50-minute podcast, and you're like, you know what, I have some questions, and or I know that I fit into this one of these insecure attachment styles, and I know it's having a negative impact on my marriage, and I don't want to wait until your program comes. Reach out to me if that's you, and we can schedule something. I can do a coaching session or a counseling session with you. We can talk about this. I'll give you some tips, some tools, some resources on how to make sure that you can change and grow in these areas. And I can help you out so that it is not having such a detrimental impact on your marriage. All right, guys, let me wrap up here because my voice is about to be gone. And I want to make sure that you are able to go back to this, go back through this and listen to it as much as you need. So that's it for today's episode, where we discussed the four attachment styles and how they could potentially impact your marriage. I spoke more so about the attachment styles and how they show up in your marriage than how they can impact your marriage. That'll have to come at a later time. I do really appreciate the fact that you joined me here for another session in the Marriage Counselor's Corner. And I want to make sure that you get as much information as you can. So make sure that you are subscribing wherever you subscribe to. So if it's iTunes, if it's Spotify or any of the other mediums that you use, subscribe. Leave me an honest rating and review. And I've been enjoying reading the reviews, guys. For those of you that have left them, I've been enjoying reading those. I really, really appreciate that. And guess what? The more people see this, the more ratings and reviews this podcast has, the more people will have access to this. So join me in the next episode where we're going to be going over another topic that you're not going to want to miss. And so just be mindful that, you know, I may switch up the topic. Like, I know I was supposed to do a Q&A. Well, that ain't going to come now. I got more information. I got more heat for you. So make sure that you're sharing, that you're liking, that you're commenting. You can always go to marriagecounselorscorner.com to leave me a question. You can email me directly at david@marpe services.com. If you have questions, you want to work with me, hit me up. Y'all know how to find me. Otherwise, I'm going to see y'all in another week. So be safe. Be strategic, stay focused, stay out of trouble, and I'll talk to y'all soon. Deuces.
Thanks for stopping by for your seat on the couch at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Remember, go to marriagecounselorscorner.com to schedule your next session. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss a session. We look forward to having you back on the couch soon. Bye-bye now.